Hello, Cheesehead Nation. Welcome to the Cheesehead TV post-game show. Not exactly the way you want to lose a game, but there are positives to take out of today, believe it or not. It's not the end of the world. Packers lost to a good team on the road, nonetheless, as the Packers lose to the Atlanta Falcons today by a score of 20-17. Thanks for joining us. What we're going to do today is recap the scoring, go over some of the individual statistics from the game, and then it's time for conversation. We'll break down the game. We'll be taking phone calls here on Cheesehead TV, where you can join us. Right off the bat, this isn't the end of the season. It was a tough game. Packers lost to arguably the best team in the NFC. It's demoralizing from the standpoint that Atlanta now has the inside track to home field advantage in the playoffs. You know, if the Packers are one of the best teams in the NFC, they may have to go to Atlanta on the road eventually. But I think this showed also just the way the Packers competed in this game, that they're also one of the best teams in the NFC. And the Packers can very well host a game themselves in the playoffs. And that's what you want. Hosting a game in Lambeau Field in January. Yeah, you might have to go on the road to Atlanta and perhaps the NFC Championship game. But the Packers just need to rebound. And that's the big thing to take away from the game here. They need to rebound. If they allow this to put them in a funk and allow this to snowball and build, then yeah, this might have been a little more devastating than anybody wants to admit. But we won't know that until weeks down the road. You know, if the Packers can put it behind them, they got a home game next week against the San Francisco 49ers. Big game next week. You know, it gets momentum back on their side if they can win. The throwback jerseys come out next week. Something to look forward to. But yeah, if they can get back on the horse, everything will be all right with the Green Bay Packers. It was disappointing today from the standpoint that, you know, Aaron Rodgers directs this comeback drive late in the fourth quarter to tie the game, and it's basically blown away, particularly by a special teams miscue. Defense gave at the end. But, I mean, all Atlanta was doing was looking to get into field goal territory. They weren't looking to score a touchdown. They didn't want to take that chance pushing the ball down the field. But anyway, let's recap the scoring here and then open it up to you, the viewer here on Cheesehead TV. Packers fall behind 3-0 in the first quarter of the game. A Matt Bryant 38-yard field goal puts the Falcons on the board first. But the Packers have the answer. Mason Crosby gets a 22-yard field goal of his own to tie it up 3-3 with 5:01 left to play in the first quarter. I'm sorry, only 7 seconds left to play in the first quarter. Falcons go up again. Second quarter comes around. With just 12 seconds left to go until halftime, Tony Gonzalez gets a 4-yard touchdown pass from Matt Ryan. Falcons take the lead 10-3. Second half, third quarter, Aaron Rodgers gets the Packers back into the game, ties it up 10-10 with a 1-yard touchdown run. In the fourth quarter, the Atlanta Falcons get back the lead once again. Go up 17-10 behind a Michael Turner 1-yard touchdown run. Then, of course, the aforementioned drive, the late fourth quarter drive directed by Aaron Rodgers, ends up finding Jordy Nelson in the corner of the end zone for a 10-yard touchdown pass, ties it up, 17-17. And then, as everyone here saw, or read, on our live blog here at Cheesehead TV, Matt Bryan, 47-yard field goal, is good with just 13 seconds left in the game. Final score, Atlanta Falcons 20, Green Bay Packers 17. Going over some of the statistics individually on the Green Bay Packers side, Aaron Rodgers completes 25 of 34 passes, 309 yards, one touchdown for a quarterback rating of 111.0. Great, fantastic game by Aaron Rodgers in the passing department. Not bad in the running department either. Aaron Rodgers is your leading rusher. Had 12 carries. That might be a career high for Aaron Rodgers in terms of number of carries. 12 carries, 51 yards for a 4.3 yard average, one touchdown. But of course, he will be remembered this game for his one fumble in the first half. Brandon Jackson, 10 carries for 26 yards. Slow start to the game. Ends up coming around near the end, but is it too little, too late? Did the Packers not put enough attention on the running game? Did the offensive line fare poorly? Brandon Jackson himself making some poor choices, trying to string that one to the outside. Dimitri Nance, one carry for 0 yards. In the receiving department, one of the high points to take away from this game, Greg Jennings leads the way in terms of yards. 4 catches for 84 yards. And I lost my... I lost my statistics. Here we go. Back up. Greg Jennings, 5 catches, 119 yards. Jordy Nelson ties for the team lead in receptions, 5 for 61. James Jones, 5 for 44. Brett Swain has 2 receptions for 40 yards. Andrew Quarles, 3 for 35. Donald Driver, 2 for 26. Brandon Jackson, 3 catches for 10 yards. And John Kuhn, 1 for 9. A lot of spreading the ball around in the receiving department. Fantastic job by the passing game. Jordy Nelson, of course, getting the game-tying touchdown reception late in the fourth quarter. And with that, we'll open up the phone lines here at Cheesehead TV. Area code 646-797-2909. Once again, that's 646-797-2909. We will open up the lines and talk about what you want to talk about as we wrap up the Green Bay Packers' loss to the Atlanta Falcons. One of the big things I noticed from today's game was the different play calling by head coach Mike McCarthy, the offensive unit as a whole. Big five going a majority, maybe not a majority, but the reemergence of the big five formation seen plenty this game. Really, I mean, it's been kind of building all season. I think the Packers, once Donald Driver went out for those couple weeks, they saw that Brett Swain was a viable receiver, and they saw, hey, we can go five wide. And the offensive line has been much better in protection this season as compared to last. So they're like, well, okay. We can probably get away with five in pass protection. And for the most part, they did today and all season long. And so they went five wide a lot of the game. Lot different this week. as opposed to previous weeks. Probably the most we've seen of the Big Five formation really since the NFC Championship year in 2007, back when Brett Favre was the quarterback. Not that we haven't seen it all since then, but to this extent, just really a different team. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Courtney on 7, please.
I'm sorry?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
How you doing? Alfredo Martinez over here.
Alfredo Martinez. I've recognized your name on the live blog a lot. I think it's the first time I've spoken to you, though. What's on your mind, Alfredo?
Not much. I was watching the game. All year long, the Packers have been saying that the running game that we have is good enough for us to get us through. But we agree this game probably proved that we're too one-dimensional.
Are we too one-dimensional? That's a good question, I guess. This game, the running game certainly didn't get going at all. At least it didn't in the first half of the game. So the second half of the game, it got going a little, but really you have to rely on Aaron Rodgers the whole time in the receiving core. And, when you're down late in the game, you can't really run a whole lot. So it's a good thing the Packers' passing game is as good as it is, I suppose. Go ahead.
No, I agree with you. Especially when, like you were saying, you have to rely, especially have to believe in your wide receiver corps. That absolutely makes up for, the lack of running game. But I'm looking at it going, thinking, we might have to face the Falcons later on in the playoffs. And they seem to be a little more balanced on the offense. Defensively, I think that, we're a little more gifted. May not have shown that as much as we wanted to, but, at some point, Aaron Rodgers was the leading rusher in the team, so I just kind of felt like, where is our running game at?
Yeah, it's almost a setback. It had been going okay this past couple weeks. The Packers are winning, of course, four games in a row, and regardless of how the running game is going, you can kind of overlook almost any deficiencies. And then when you get a loss like this, you kind of look back and you say, well, once again, is the running game good enough to, be a contender? Yes, the Packers are probably a playoff team, but are they a contender in the playoffs, and can their running game get them even further? I suppose we'll see in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. All right, that's all I really want to know. Obviously, I just want to talk to somebody who's idolize the next verse, so thank you for your input here.
I don't know about that, but thank you, Alfredo, for calling in. And we enjoy seeing you on the live blog every week, so take care.
All right, say goodbye.
The Green Bay Packers running game gained a total of 4 yards from the running backs in the first half. I believe Brandon Jackson had 4 yards in the first half. And that actually went backwards, I believe, when he had that third quarter run where he tried to string it out to the right sideline, ended up losing 6 yards. So I think it went in the negative side for a while. And then all of a sudden, late in the fourth quarter, the Packers are going primarily with the pass. And then they mix in the run there, and they had a little bit of success, and Brandon Jackson ends up with 20-some yards to end the game. But, certainly not a stellar performance. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Hi, Rick Dembinski.
Hi, Rick. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm just curious, and this is an academic question, given the fact that the Falcons went down and kicked the winning field goal, but I'm curious why McCarthy, or with less than a minute left, they didn't opt for going for a 2-point conversion to hopefully end it. Obviously, there would have been less time on the clock. it might have been a different decision. I just thought that going for two after that touchdown would have been the way to go.
Well, I guess you're just, you know, faced with the decision of, you know, losing the game on the other hand. So, you know, you kick it, you're
true,
at least alive. Go ahead.
Well, basically end it right then and there is what I'm thinking. I'm just curious why they never opt to go for two and just end the game right there, so to speak. Assuming your defense, which our defense being as good as it is, could have stopped. I mean, obviously with that face masking penalty, that put us in the hole right away. But the reality was we could have walked off the field with a three and out or a three and stop, and that would have been the end of the game. No overtime, no decision, no worrying about who wins the coin toss, you know?
I get what you're saying. I guess the coach is the GOAT, though, if they go for two and don't make it. You know, it's all on the coach's shoulders then. It's not on the players. Everybody's going to blame the coach. So I guess that's why Mike McCarthy opts to kick the extra point, because he knows the media, the fans, you name it, probably even the players would blame him for a missed two-point conversion. I guess that's the way I see it.
Well, it would make for good theater, though, don't you think, if they could pull it off?
it would obviously be fantastic. But, you know, ifs and buts, or however the saying goes, you know, you just never know. So, I
true enough.
But thanks for joining us on the post-game show. We'll continue to debate it.
All right, great. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, take care. Yeah, I mean, most coaches in the NFL, like college football, high school football, they all go for the same thing. You go for the one that's going to be converted 99% of the time, whereas a two-point conversion, what, you know, it's pretty much a 50-50 proposition, you know, going for it, as opposed to, you know, then you're the loser. Then there's really no choice, but anyhow. Feel free. We have a phone line open. Area code 646-797-2909. Share your thoughts on the game. Where do you think the Packers went wrong today? We can always bring up the conversation of the quarterback sneak, and we'll get to that in a second. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show.
What's up, Brian? This is CD Angeli calling in.
CD Angeli of TundraVision.com. Good to hear your voice, CD.
Hey, it's good to hear yours. I wish we were all just a little more chipper about it at this point.
I'm in the same boat, but go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, the first thing that was just coming to my mind, you know, and we kind of went back and forth on this on Twitter earlier, was just the choice of a goal line quarterback sneak. Interested in hearing your thought process on it, because I've been saying for quite a while that's just a dangerous play. It's just a dangerous thing to take Aaron Rodgers, who is really irreplaceable, put him in a situation for a turnover, put him in a situation even more scarily to get hurt. Why are we not taking Nance and putting Quinn Johnson, Tom Crabtree, whomever else in front of him, and just bowling that thing right through the line?
Yeah, I mean, this was a hot-button topic near the end of the first half there. I mean, I can see both sides of the argument. I fall on the side where I find it hard to blame Mike McCarthy for the play call in that, I mean, if they do happen to get the touchdown, it's a great play call then. Nobody complains. You know, the old hindsight's 20/20. But I do see the other side of the argument, and I saw a tweet from Jersey Al saying that, you know, 2 yards is quite a far way away for a quarterback sneak. And I see that rationale as well. And there's the other, you know, you bring up a good point about, you know, putting the ball in the hands of your quarterback when you do have punishing runners like Dimitri Nance or John Kuhn or, you know, whoever, a Quinn Johnson. So there's plenty of ways you can go with this. Did the Packers make the right choice? I guess we'll always continue to debate that as time goes on here. I guess the one more thing I brought up is I'd be more if I was to criticize Mike McCarthy, I'd fall more along the lines of criticizing the first sneak, when it's pretty much the same thing Aaron Rodgers did against the Miami Dolphins. He starts out in the shotgun and five wide, reads the defense, sees something he likes, and then quick runs up to the center. I suppose he didn't do it too quick, but then tries to sneak it in. And you know, I think that's something the Falcons had probably scouted, but I assume you, CD, are along the lines of you didn't like the phone call and or the phone call. You're on the phone call.
I didn't like the play call
and you rather would have put the ball in the hands of somebody else.
Well, you know, Aaron Rodgers, I think is. You know, we saw it during the game. He's a tremendous athlete, and unfortunately, I think he's one of our truest running threats. But I think you get in there on the end zone. You got all those big guys, and you know, you're right. We've done it so many times and been successful at it. And you sit to say, well, yeah, but it's okay. Aaron Rodgers is fantastic. He'll always score for us. It's great. Well, here's the one time he didn't. And you know what? I wasn't as worried about the turnover. I was worried about his hand.
Yeah, he seemed to have dinged it up there a little bit, and I saw some other tweets, people hearkening back to the Washington game where I believe it's Greg Bedard said he appeared woozy after the Washington game. But yeah, you're putting your quarterback in the line of fire, as it were. And there's so many different directions you can go with this. I understand
that. Right.
There was a.
But you're right. Also,
go ahead.
You're right. Also, in the sense that you know, it is somewhat hindsight. Had he done it, we wouldn't worry about it. Yeah. So, what can you do?
There was an article just this week. I forgot who wrote about it first, but noting that Aaron Rodgers hasn't fumbled at all this year, and I suppose that was the kiss of death. Noting that you know a quarterback who's started all. 11 games this season hasn't fumbled, which is actually quite remarkable. But he puts
right.
The ball on the ground. And anyway, thanks for calling, CD. Everybody check out
undervision.com. All right. Keep up the great work there, Mr. Caribou.
Thanks a lot. See you later.
All right. You bet. Bye-bye.
And we got another phone call. We'll take it here straight away. You're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hey, we have Josh from Florida.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for checking in from so far away, a Packer transplant yourself. So what's on your mind?
That was a horrible game. I couldn't believe that face mask call on that return.
Oh, it's demoralizing. That's what Matt Wilhelm, you know, for better or worse, will be known for in his time with the Packers. He hasn't done anything else noteworthy this season aside from a face mask call. So, yes, I see what you're saying.
Yep, four losses, all by 3 points or less this season. This team could easily be undefeated if it weren't for those four losses.
It's possible, and that shows you how good of a team the Packers really can be. They're really, every game they've played in has been close. You're talking overtime losses here, and the ones that aren't going to overtime are ending right at the end of the game. You can make that argument, but, you know, there's a silver lining to that as well, in that this team is pretty good, and had this been at Lambeau Field, they might have been able to win.
Yes. Yeah. They need to definitely come back and bounce back next weekend. That's a must win now. Now we all have to be Philadelphia Eagles fans today.
Yeah. So they beat the Chicago Bears, huh? Big game next week. It's going to go a lot in terms of momentum. If they can get momentum back on their side, because after the 49er game, they have two more straight on the road. And even though one comes against the lowly Lions, I mean, a win's a win at this point in the year, and you need to build momentum, as I said earlier.
Yeah, they need to get their playoff push going.
Exactly.
That game again
Frank Gore is scaring me about next weekend, though, seeing how Turner ran over on run defense today. It seems like Clay Matthews, they exclusively blocked him. He wasn't in the backfield. He didn't get any pressure to the quarterback except for on a couple series. It seemed like he was really taken out of this game.
Yeah, you didn't hear a lot about Clay Matthews today. Certainly no sacks, which he's known for. And Michael Turner is a beast. I'll give him that. Those legs are like tree trunks.
I saw that.
But thanks for checking in from Florida. We appreciate you checking out Cheesehead TV from that distance. So take care.
Oh, no problem, man. Big time follower. Awesome website. Thank you. Thanks you for having it up.
All right. Bye.
All right. Take care, man.
Yeah, Michael Turner, is he a beast to take down or what? Those tree trunks for legs. You understand why the Packers had such a hard time tackling him. Not, and like I said, not to excuse their tackling, but I mean he's as tough to take down as any running back in the NFL. From a power standpoint, you know, there's guys that are harder to tackle in the open field because they will put a move on you and get around you. Michael Turner's not that type of person. He's going to run over you, and it's hard to wrap him up. But, a fantastic running back. And, as we're talking about here, getting momentum and things like that, well, I'll get to momentum in a second. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Michael Cuphound from Seattle.
Fantastic. Cuphound, good to hear your voice as well. First time I think I've heard you, so thanks for joining us. What's on your mind?
You predicted this loss fairly accurately, much to Corey's chagrin. What went into that decision in advance, and did we look the way you thought we would? Did anything surprise you?
I did predict it. I predicted a loss. The reason I did was that the Falcons have a lot of weapons. To me, it was Roddy White and Matt Ryan and Michael Turner and Tony Gonzalez. And really, Roddy White wasn't if one thing surprised me, the Packers did a pretty good job on him today. You know, I guess that maybe that shouldn't surprise me, the way Tremont Williams has played this season. I thought he would be more of a factor, but it was really Matt Ryan, I think, who did the damage today, not turning the ball over. So I give him the biggest credit, and Michael Turner did well, did good as well.
Do you like this model of offense they have better than ours?
Do I like this model of offense? They certainly
have. Their O-line looked pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, they really protected Ryan well. They have a nice run-to-pass ratio. Of course, you know, they can mix it up at any time because they're effective at both. Which right now the Packers are not effective at the run. So, that kind of takes one element out of the Packers game. You know, the Packers can surprise a team with a run once in a while. But, they're just not a consistent threat. Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks, Brian. I appreciate it.
No problem, Cuphound. Don't be a stranger, and feel free to call back in anytime.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Yeah, take care. A lot of comments about the Packers' running game today, before noting that they've gotten just a few yards on the ground, and then when you compare them, as Cuphound was, comparing them to the Falcons, and not quite the run-pass ratio you want from the Packers like they can at any time, almost seemingly on any down. And now, the Falcons aren't going to convert a 3rd-and-10 on with a run by Michael Turner, but, impressive nonetheless. finally getting a chance to hear to look at the live blog a little bit, taking all these calls. I haven't got a chance to read our faithful readers here on the live blog here yet, but Packer M. Burrow comments, did Atlanta get Turner for a second round pick? Hell, he's worth a first. Michael Turner really has made Atlanta into a contender. I mean, they all have. I mean, when you add playmakers like Roddy White and Matt Ryan, and you get them all together, I mean, that's a legitimate team here. But yeah, that certainly is worth a bargain, that's for sure. Oppie comments, taking into consideration the Atlanta D-line versus shaky Packers offensive line, at least in the first half. I tell you what, John Abraham of the Falcons made a difference. I believe he was questionable going into this Packers game. Abraham was. And he was really a stud. For a person that's questionable to play in the game, he certainly didn't look injured at all, at least to me. He really was an effective player for the Packers, or for the Falcons, and really had the Packers' offensive line on the run and really forcing them to make a living protecting Aaron Rodgers. Packer West says, McCarthy's stupid goal line play calling and non-challenges lost this and the Redskins game. Those two losses are on him. I would love to see the call pass to the tight end on the 1 yard line one time. This is a team with a lot of talent in the receiving department. And I saw a lot of points on Twitter throughout the game saying that as well. You know, the Packers during that goal line quarterback sneak, why don't you throw to one of the talented receivers on this team? Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Hey, Brian, it's Kyle Cousineau calling from Green Bay.
Kyle, checking in from Green Bay Packers headquarters. How are you today, sir?
Oh, it'd be a lot better if that game was a W instead of a loss. But
I hear you.
I think the rest of Packer Nation can agree with me on that, at least.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody. Go ahead.
What I'm kind of concerned about, and I, you know, with the Packers now, four losses, all four of them within 3 points, and the parallels between each of the losses is a little disturbing. I mean, every one of our losses, there's been a lack of pressure on the quarterback. There's been untimely, stupid penalties made. And I'm not talking about the penalty on Wilhelm, because, you know, like Aaron Nagler retweeted or made a comment on one of my tweets, he did probably save a touchdown with his face mask. I'm talking about the defensive holding penalty on Charles Woodson on third down that let a drive go on in the first quarter. You know, the terrible tackling. I mean, A.J. Hawk on that 26-yard run or whatever that Turner had to get down towards the goal line or to get into the red zone, I mean, he just flat out whiffed. You know, it's like the team, you know, the play calling, the special teams. I mean, there's so many parallels between all four of those losses. You know, it's like the same game. You're just changing who they're playing against, and they make the same mistake.
I see. Yeah, you know, I can definitely hear that. It's all the losses, kind of the same things happen. And they don't happen in the wins. And I suppose that's the difference, obviously. You know, they're not making stupid penalties, and, you know, they're not having special teams miscues. And that's the difference in the game. But, yeah, I mean, you go back to the games where they have penalty problems. I mean, you go back to the Bears game where they had 18 of them, and of course, you lose those types of games. So, there's something to be said for that, that's for sure.
You know, and it's like the last 4 weeks, that team seems so disciplined, you know, and they weren't making the stupid penalties, you know, the false starts and whatnot, and the defensive holding or hands to the face. But it's just amazing how just those little things affect the outcome of a three-point game. You know, it's hard to stomach when you're watching it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. I thought, you know, the coaching staff has gotten to be changing things up a little bit. You know, last week they go with a different coin flip. This week you see them with the different offense with the big five, and you see them do a little bit of hurry-up offense today too with the no huddle, which is a little bit different for the Packers. Not to say they've never done that, but certainly not as much as this week. So is it the coaching staff or is it the players? And maybe I'll ask you about that, Kyle. Who do we blame for this?
You know, I think you have to put the onus on both of them. You know, on both sides of it, the coaching staff and the players. I mean, players make plays, coaches call the plays. You know, I mean, that's about as obvious as it gets. But I have a hard time agreeing with the QB sneak down at the goal line. We saw what happened when we tried that against Chicago. We saw what happened when we tried that against Washington. You know, why not run that quarterback draw that you scored on the next possession? Why don't you run that play, or at least, you know, spread the offense out, which then spreads the defense out. You're not running Aaron Rodgers, you know, into a wall, mm-hmm. trying to, you know, and like Jersey Al said, 2 yards is, you know, 2 feet is one thing. 2 yards is totally different.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, it's the chicken or the egg here. Is it the coaches or the players? And we could go round and round in circles,
exactly.
I guess. But Kyle, thanks for calling
exactly.
us. Good to hear your voice.
All right, Brian.
And take care.
Keep up the good work, buddy.
All right, see ya. Kyle Cousineau. I gave McCarthy credit after the last game. He really turned things around in the penalty department. He really worked some wonders as far as, you know, he had that coin flip the last game where they deferred to the second half. He goes and makes this change with the personnel, putting the big five on the field a lot more often this game. And you're seeing a team that had won 4 games, but now they lost. And they lost to a good team, no doubt. So, again, it's the Packers just need to bounce back. Next week, they really need a good performance against the San Francisco 49ers. It's all about momentum. It's all about momentum. As long as they can keep building momentum, they'll be okay. You know, then the next week they go to Detroit, who has 2 wins on the season, and that's a very winnable game. Detroit's, you know, has talent there. They have Javid Best. They have Ndamukong Suh. But that's a winnable game, and then really it's the stretch run after that Detroit game. You're coming down to the end of December and the beginning of January and on to the playoffs, and the Packers need 2 big wins these next couple weeks here, no doubt at all. Going back to the beginning of the game, a little bit of interesting. The decision to make Donald Lee not active today, I suppose it came back to bite him a little bit in that Spencer Havener was injured. You can't really predict something like that's going to happen. So, I mean, you can't blame the coaching staff for not seeing something like that. But, Donald Lee, inactive, little bit of a surprise. Certainly, I think special teams factored into that. Donald Lee is not fast at all. He doesn't make much of an impact on special teams. In fact, one of the few units he does play on is punt, where he's probably a lot of it is probably the protection he provides on punts. He was on kickoff to begin the season, but then they took him off of that, and I really think it was the speed. So it'll be interesting to see how Spencer Havener comes out of this game. Another injury situation, Brandon Chiller got injured. When I do a little bit of post-game review, film review, I'll be watching third and long, you know, pretty much all season long, or ever since Nick Barnett has been out for the year. The Packers have replaced Desmond Bishop with Brandon Chiller on third and long, fourth and long. So it'll be interesting to go back and see how Chiller performs, because that's always been a little controversial, that substitution there. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have with us?
What's going on, Brian? It's Alex.
Alex Talich of the Packers Lounge. Very good. Alex, I see you've already gotten your postgame reaction up. What did it say? I haven't had a chance to read it yet, obviously.
It's kind of my play-by-play of the game. Basically, I just sit here and write down what I'm thinking as the time goes. So it doesn't say too much. I mean, to be honest, and I said I'm Packer transplants, Packers were going to blow them out, but I pretty much felt all along that this was going to be a loss. And I pretty much state that from the beginning to end. You know, it's the truth, man. I'm going to always say the Packers aren't going to blow them out, so I don't have to listen to Corey Banky bitch at me. But, you know, you can't – I never felt good about this game. It's just the Packers had to play, you know, the game of the season, and they haven't shown yet that they can do that. And they didn't. So be it. I'm not really all that upset.
Well, you do have to say they played well on the road against the Jets earlier this season, though. I mean, that defensive performance was as good as it comes.
I agree. The Jets' offense isn't all that, though. And Atlanta's got a guy who was able to pound the ball, and it really exposed some of the Packers' weaknesses. And, you know, in my quick picks, we just got out-coached more than anything. I mean, yeah, there was the fumble and a couple bad calls, but, I mean, all that could be avoided with some better coaching decisions, or a lot of it could have. And, you know, I put this one on the shoulders of the coaching staff. That's kind of where I'm at today. You know, we didn't play a perfect game. We needed to. Can't blame the Packers for that. It was a fun game to watch.
Speaking of coaching decisions, I guess the one that sticks out in my mind was the choice not to review the Tony Gonzalez fourth down catch, and I'm using air quotes here, and that it looks like he actually dropped it. And what do you think about that play as a coaching decision? Is McCarthy guilty for not reviewing that?
What do I think about it? I'm pissed as hell because even I knew that was a drop. Man, I'm watching. The game wasn't on here today, so I had to watch one of those stream things.
Yep.
So I was like 30 seconds behind. And before, I mean, I had less time to make the decision, and I could tell it wasn't a catch. So I don't know what was going on. I mean, you think with the millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars involved that you'd be able to have a video. I mean, I knew it wasn't a catch. I saw the replay. Why can't they see the replay in the booth?
Yeah, that brings up an interesting point. And they're talking about on the live blog right now. I remember Jason Wilde had tweeted that there's a delay where he is in the press box. I don't know if that's where it is in the coach's box. And then I think he said something about the television quality as well, you know, not being like HD or anything like that. It'll be interesting to know, to hear from the coaches in the post-game press conferences what kind of review they had, what kind of viewpoint they had up in the coaching boxes, I suppose.
If that's true, that's BS, because there is absolutely no reason that there should be an unfair advantage or anything like that going on, no matter where you are. I mean, if that's something, I mean, I see that as an agree. I'd be more upset about that if that is true, and I didn't hear that till now, so now I'm double pissed. But if that is true, that's the most egregious thing about this whole game, coaching, refs, everything, because that was a momentum changer. That and the stupid three-man rush on first and or third and 20 or third and 10, whatever that stupid thing was, when you got nine guys to tackle one guy in 6 yards and you can't stop them. There, I feel better.
I'm glad we can provide.
That changed the game right there. You got them 3rd and 10. They dump it off. They got 5 yards to go. You got 3 professional football players standing in front of the guy, and you can't tackle him. Right then and there, I really knew it was over, and that's when I really quit getting upset. So, I don't know. Always next week. Always next.
Alex, I'm glad we can provide catharsis here on Cheesehead TV. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you later.
Great show, Brian. We'll see you later.
Take care. Alex Telich on the Packers Lounge, cheeseheadtv.com/lounge. Check it out. The gut reactions, I think, are already up. Or is it the Aaron Nagler does the gut reactions and Alex Telich does the, what is it? Highlights from the game. I forget what he titles it. Checking out the comments on the live blog. CD Angeli says it was worth 2 timeouts in the long run, wasn't it? I might be behind here, but I thought, you know, definitely it was worth challenging that 4th down call, the catch by Tony Gonzalez. I mean, you're at the end of the first half, and if you lose a timeout, they had two as it was. And if you lose a timeout at that point, it really wouldn't have been a big deal because there's only, you know, there was 2 minutes left till halftime as it was. Quick hits, Corey Banky says. Thank you. Quick hits. CD Angeli says, I don't think it was Fox's issue. Most stadiums have their own in-house replays. Lambeau does. That's a good question, whether it is the in-house or it's the Fox broadcast that they're looking at there. And we'll find out, I suppose, as news from the post-game shows roll in. And we find out what the thought process was from Mike McCarthy and the advice he was getting from up in the booth. Rupert says there were 3 minutes left in the first half at the time of the non-challenge. 2, 3. The point is that there wasn't a whole lot of time left. And I think even if they, you know, the call didn't go their way, losing a timeout at that point wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world, and more so because I believe it would have been overturned. But it's a moot point now. We're belaboring here on the negative, I suppose, for the time being, and I would like to bring up the production of the wide receivers this game as kind of a positive. I ticked Alex. I'm sorry about that, Alex. It wasn't my intention. The production of the wide receivers, though, really good this game. I thought Aaron Rodgers did a fantastic job spreading the ball around. Every wide receiver had at least 2 catches. You know, the top 5 receivers. And then you go to the tight ends and running backs after that. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Hey, Brian, Jersey Al here.
Jersey Al, what's your thoughts on this week's game?
Well, you've had a lot of good callers here. You guys have hit on a lot of the salient points. You know, the issues with the quarterback sneaks. Alex brought up the Snelling play, which I also think was a huge play in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you stopped him there, and obviously the Falcons don't get the go-ahead touchdown.
Yep.
At that time. The face mask you touched on, right away I said, you know, I think that was actually a good play to bring him down, because I think the guy was gone if he didn't. So I don't think that really matters at all.
Yeah, you can say that because, I mean, even if he doesn't go all the way, he probably got at least 15 more, which was the you know, the extent of the penalty.
Yeah. Absolutely. I watched it back, and really only Sam Shields was in a position downfield where he might have been able to caught him. But like you said, he would have easily gained the 15 yards and more if he doesn't bring him down. So I don't want to hear people complaining about that. That has nothing to do with why they lost the game. However, I'll bring up something that I don't think anyone else has brought up here, and that is time management at the end of the game, one of my pet peeves.
Okay.
With 6 minutes left, is there a reason to go no huddle on every play? Especially when you're not running the ball.
Yeah, you know what? But what was the time on the clock when they snapped it, though? I see they did go a lot of no huddle, but a lot of times, though, you know, they take their time in reading the defense.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to go back and watch it myself. You know, sometimes the no huddle for the Packers has been, yeah, they don't huddle, but they do take a fair amount of time at the line. And I guess I would have to go back and see when they snapped the ball. But I suppose, I mean, they, you know.
Either way, I think they are using up less time. I mean, that's the reason they did it in that spot. They were trying to conserve time. And, you know, I don't think with 6 minutes left it's that important. I'm sitting here the whole time saying, you're just going to leave time on the clock for the Falcons. If, you know, if you do go down and score, you're just guaranteeing that they're going to have time left on the clock, and that's exactly what happened. So I have a bit of a problem with that.
Yeah.
But even that, I'm not blaming the loss on that. You know, it's just something I wanted to bring up that no one else had mentioned. Something else to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it's things that add up. I mean, it's a special teams right. miscue here and a penalty there and time management here and missed tackles there and they build, and they're all reasons the Packers lose. So, Al, I don't know if you were in time to joining us earlier, but everybody was mentioning your tweet about the 2 yards and this quarterback sneak. Do you want to say anything more about that? Seeing as you really brought up the topic.
No, I mean that's. To me, it's pretty obvious, you know, when you're down on the goal line. If you're under a yard and you want to run a quarterback sneak, it's a good play. If you're at 2 yards and you're hoping to make 2 yards with a quarterback sneak, especially when the other teams are kind of expecting it because of your history, I think it's a really bad play. You know, I think that 1 yard, yard and a half makes a huge difference down there. And they run it twice in a row.
Yeah, twice in a row. You know, very different situations in that the first time they had spread the team out, and the second time, you know, they really brought, I think they had two tight ends in. But, I mean, it's still a quarterback sneak nonetheless, and especially you've got a guy like John Kuhn on the sidelines, you know, a guy who, you know, might hold on to the ball a little bit better, perhaps. Again, hindsight's 20/20, but we can only speculate.
Yeah. Like
Jersey
said,
Al?
The first, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the first one, like you said, they kind of tried to pull a little surprise sneak there. And, you know, I don't have as much of a problem with that. But, you know, once that gets stuffed, to just come right back with it again from 2 yards away, I think is really silly. And on that first, that brings up on the first down on that goal line red zone opportunity, do you think he was throwing to Johnson? I don't think he was throwing to Johnson. I think Johnson interfered with the play. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he threw to Corliss technically. I can't blame Quinn Johnson for throwing his arms up there.
I mean,
he thinks it's to him, and he got his hands on it, so it's hard to blame him. I don't know if he was, you know, too deep or Corliss wasn't deep enough with his route, but... Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the coaches have to say about that play coming out of the game, what they thought was the reason there.
Yeah, that's all. It's just a curiosity. I just wanted to hear what you thought about that, too. So.
Yeah, that brings up a good point. Jersey anyway. Al, thanks for joining us, and everybody go to jerseyal.com. We appreciate it.
All right, Brian, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Yep. Jerseyal.com. Check it out. One more point that hasn't been brought up on this show yet. Maybe you guys were talking about it on the live blog. In the second half, Sam Shields getting called for the stiff arm, the penalty that went along with that. I mean, it really ended up being moot because that was the happened before the Packers put on their practically 90-yard drive, or, you know, I don't remember the exact number it was, but in the fourth quarter, you know, the Packers went on to score, but kind of interesting. You don't see that called very often. It's not like Sam Shields grabbed the guy's face mask. He just put a stiff arm to it, kept his hand open, and put a hand to his head, and you know, you just don't see that called. And you know, I mean, even for a person who watches as much football as I do, and I know the people who are watching this show right now watch a lot of football too, because we're all talking about it all the time. And it's just something that, you know, I don't even really know that the history of that off the top of my head, whether that's a point of emphasis this season with the officials. You know, it seems like every year there's new points of emphasis, things like that. I thought I remember somebody mentioning that. It was perhaps Wayne and Larry talking about that on the radio broadcast. I can't quite remember, but Jamie Jores says his hand went under the face mask, barely, briefly, or at least that's what the call was, not a face mask. Interesting. Corey Benke says that was garbage, and Kyle Cousineau agrees with him up above on the live blog. I can't repeat his language, but yeah, it just did seem that that was a weird call that that happened. So a little bit of interesting here. Tweet coming in from Rob Domofsky. Don Lee says, I heard that some guys are going to have to compete to be up for this game, but I didn't think in a million years it would be me. So yeah, we just talked about earlier about Donald Lee being inactive for the game. It's interesting. Before, when the Packers came off the bye week, you know, they had been getting pretty healthy as of that point. You know, coming off the bye week, they made all their roster decisions, all the people, or, you know, that anybody who needed to be on injured reserve was on injured reserve, and, you know, they had a week to get off and get healthy, and I thought last week, the Vikings game, I predicted Donald Lee would be inactive because they had gotten Spencer Havener back, and I thought, well, okay, they're making the decision here. They're going to go with the younger guys, and I was wrong. They went with Donald Lee last week, and maybe Spencer Havener wasn't healthy enough to go last week. Apparently, he wasn't healthy to go this week either. But then, you know, once they activated him, I thought, boy, Donald Lee would be active again against the Falcons. I mean, just based upon last week's call. And no, they had deactivated him, didn't put him on the game day 45-man roster, and that would be that. But Donald Lee, one of the inactives, the person I thought who would be inactive would be Brandon Underwood. Pardon me here. And pardon me for being distracted. Corey Benke's trying to message me as a producer here, and Sounds good, Corey. Disregard with the private message that I sent you here. Made a mistake, but regardless here, we're going to... Oh, pardon me. But anyway here, folks, the point being with this entire game that very little, you know, things to be worried about. The Packers are looking good here. And, you know, they lost to a good team on the road. On the road. Had this team, had this game been played at Lambeau Field, then, you know, the Packers certainly almost could have won this game, I think. And they would be in great shape right now. But we'll take one more phone call here, and then we'll wrap things up. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Hey, Brian, it's Keith Kuby. How are you?
Very good, Keith. Fantastic. I would assume the state of most Packer fans would be that they're not quite in that boat, though.
Well, you stole a little bit of my thunder in that the Packers did lose to a very good team. And I think it's a situation where, you know, it may be coming down the line that we could meet again and have to go through Atlanta one more time.
Absolutely. I mean, the playoffs come, and I mean, I don't know what's going to happen over the next month of the season. But, I mean, the Falcons now are, you know, they've got a leg up on everybody in the NFC as far as getting home field advantage. They should at least be hosting a divisional game and maybe the NFC Championship game on top of that.
Right, and you're right with having a leg up, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. And with the terribly weak schedule that they have to that they're playing the remainder of the season, it's going to seem like everybody's going to have to go through Atlanta in the NFC.
Yeah. You know, there's a big game going on. I think right now, as we speak, if I'm correct, the Bears and the Eagles. I mean, that's a big game as far as you know, seeding goes in the playoffs. Of course, the Packers are tied coming into this week with the Bears for the best record to top the NFC North. So that will be a big game as well. But yep, the Falcons have a leg up, and we'll see how things shake out.
I guess one question that I've had is special teams. Why is it that we cannot find anybody to return kicks or punts on a consistent basis?
Good point. Do we have an hour? Yeah, it's disappointing that the Packers, for several years now, have really not had a good, you know, dual threat as both a punt and a kick returner. I really like what Sam Shields brings to the table as a kick returner. I think he's very fast, and he showed that, you know, he almost broke one today. He got to the 35-yard line and got tripped up by the kicker. But, of course, you can't trust Sam Shields on punt returns because he's liable to drop one or fumble one at any time. And then you've got one of your best players on defense out as the punt returner instead. And while Tremont Williams has done an admirable job, you don't want him to get injured. So I see that argument as well. But you bring up a good point, Keith.
Well, the one thing, well, you brought up a good point as well. I hate to make it sound like a mutual admiration society here, but the thing that you hit on is the Packers have had this problem for years, for many years. And that's what is so frustrating about it, that either roster move or find somebody, or there's got to be somebody even on the practice squad that has the ability to do this consistently.
I wish it was that easy. I don't think it is. I really think, you know, it's a tough skill. I mean, you can find guys like Sam Shields who have all the speed in the world, but don't know how to catch the ball consistently. And then you can find guys who can catch it fine, but aren't really the threat to make a long run. And I guess it's, you're just going to have to start over every year from a scouting standpoint and look in the college ranks and see if there is somebody like that. You know, it's disappointing. It was just a couple years ago, the Packers drafted the kid from TCU, I believe, in like the fourth round. I forget the kid's name now, even because they ended up cutting him. But yeah, they spent a fourth round draft choice on a return specialist, and he didn't end up panning out. So you waste a fourth rounder on one. And but yeah, I mean it's a point that's lacking in the Packers game. That's for sure.
Well, thanks so much, Brian. I appreciate you letting me on the show, and keep up the good work.
No problem, Keith. Anytime, call back.
All righty.
And with that, we're going to wrap things up here on Cheesehead TV on our post-game show. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Keep your daubers up. the Packers still have a winning record, and as long as they can get back on the horse next week against the 49ers, Detroit after that, they'll be okay. For everybody here at Cheesehead TV, from our producer, Corey Benke, our moderator, Jamie Jors, from Alex Talich and Aaron Nagler as well, Ollie Phelps, take care, everyone, and make sure to check out the coverage here at Cheesehead TV throughout the week. So take care, and we will see you later.